The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Indeed it is, but I am not Dory Monson. I am Jason Rance filling in for today. Thank you so much for tuning in. Got a lot to get to. We only have an hour left to do it. Governor Jay Inslee says he's optimistic on fighting climate change. We'll tell you why. Plus, President Trump's personal attorney, Jenna Ellis, is going to be reacting to Nancy Pelosi's 25th Amendment stunt. Let's find out what's in The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Top story.
So we start today with some rather significant news, and I kind of feel like people should be jumping for joy right now, but my producer from AM770 KTTH, Peyton, is just looking at me like it's not that big of a deal. You, sir, are wrong.
It's not that big of a deal.
Jay Inslee has actually figured out how to defeat climate change. Now, I know what you're thinking. He's never really had an accomplishment when it comes to making meaningful change on climate change. I know you're probably going to say, well, carbon emissions actually have gone up over the term that he's served as governor. However, he figured out how to actually do it.
He should run for president if he figured out how to do it.
Yeah. I mean, in fairness to that disastrous run, had he had this tool at his disposal at the time, it could be an Inslee-Harris ticket.
He might have had 45 more seconds of talking time at the debates.
Possible. I mean, he might have had a total of 45 seconds talking time.
Wow.
Yeah.
That could have helped him.
He told NPR about the only way that we can defeat climate change.
We need to be optimistic. It's just the only effective tool. And, you know, I think maybe it was Churchill said, when you're going through hell, keep going. And that's what we need to do in this matter.
What was the tool? Optimism?
I think optimism and going through hell.
Now, hold on.
But just keep going is what he said.
It kind of made it sound like optimism is the only tool.
We need to be optimistic. It's just the only effective tool.
Optimism is the only effective tool to go after climate change?
Precisely.
We don't have any other tools?
Nope.
But optimism.
Are you asking for more than just optimism?
Am I wrong to think that no matter one's political stance on climate change, we can all agree that optimism is not the only tool?
Maybe you should try and be more optimistic, Jason.
Okay, hold on. Okay, I'm done. I'm optimistic. Is it still a threat?
Forest fires are done.
Although, weirdly, he also said he has some more tools while saying there's only one tool. But he actually has more tools, and I do think that this is important. I am someone who is an environmentalist. I'm not an environmentalist by the left standard, right? I happen to be a Republican, and we are supposed to be shunned. But I take a position of actually wanting to curb any sort of detriment to the environment so long as we're not in the process pushing an anti-capitalist or anti-business position, but I am happy to stand in support of the environment as Jay Inslee, so I'm not going to interrupt him at all as he gives us some analysis.
There is progress going on in the United States. We just need to make it national.
I said I was going to let him finish and me not interrupt.
Yeah, it went about 5 seconds, and then you interrupted.
There is some progress in the United States, right?
Yes.
We just need it to go national. The progress in the United States is, in fact, national. That's what national means. So, okay, that's a dum-dum comment, as we like to say.
He's chock full of them.
Yeah.
The technology, the rapidity of the technological progress is incredible. Okay. I actually wrote a book about this a decade ago
You're a bestseller, right?
The kids call that a flex.
Yeah. I mean, it would be a flex if it sold more than 17 copies, but okay.
The vision that we were going to have technological changes to make.
Did he just say he had the vision we're going to have technological advances? That's what he said? That's his flex? In a book 10 years ago, there's a thing called futurists. There have been many, 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 many people who have always said, literally every single year since the Luddites, that we would have increases in technology. He is saying he should be seen as almost a leader because he thought we would have technology advancements?
Progress.
Okay.
Is incredible. I actually wrote a book about this a decade ago and had a vision that we were going to have technological changes to make electric cars productive, which they now are becoming cost-effective.
What? He had that vision. Did you realize he had that vision? And here I thought literally everyone had that exact same vision. In fact, I have a vision right now.
Ooh, let's hear it.
Technology in 10 years? Going to be better than it is today in 2020.
Boom. Mind blown.
Bam. I could write a book, too.
Well, we have to
wait. Put that down and Jason tells the future.
We have to wait 10 years to see if that's actually going to play out. Because if you're wrong, that's a tough
take. Oh, my gosh. If I'm wrong, then technology no longer ceases to exist.
In huge range. The solar would become cheaper in wind than coal. That has happened. So the technology, the curve of technology is as rapid in clean energy as it was in computing. And if you see how far we've come since the first laptop, we're doing the same thing in clean energy.
Oh, my gosh. He gives me a headache. Because it kind of always sounds like he thinks he's saying something very, very unique and almost earth-shattering. When he says things that are neither unique nor earth-shattering. He has gaffes or embarrassing statements in almost every answer he gives to questions that must be really, really simple. In this case, from NPR, what can we do? What tools do we have to go after climate change? He didn't actually give us a tool other than to say, in the future, I knew we were going to have better technology and optimism.
Optimism.
Okay. Let's find out what else is in the big lead.
The big lead. Top trending.
I have some good news for Jenny Durkin, possibly Shama Sawant. The recall efforts against Jenny Durkin was tossed out by the state Supreme Court. The court called the recall, quote, factually and legally insufficient. But they did say at the same time that the allegations against her are deeply troubling. Now, they didn't actually give their reasoning as to why it wasn't legally sufficient, or frankly, they didn't even tell us why they even think it's deeply troubling. We are owed a longer decision at some point at a later date. But I imagine the timing here is a sort of a stand down. You don't need to get any more signatures. We'll tell you why in a bit, but this is what our ruling's going to be. The recall bar for anyone in that position here in Seattle is that whatever the conduct is has to be, quote, substantial, and that it has to, quote, clearly amount to misfeasance, malfeasance, or a violation of the oath of office. Now, in this particular case, the recall blamed Jenny Durkin for Seattle police using tear gas at the riots, which, of course, the recall activists actually claim were peaceful protests, but they weren't, in fact, peaceful protests. This is absolutely nonsensical. The idea that all of a sudden the police were throwing tear gas and using pepper spray just against peaceful protesters. We know that, of course, that is not a legitimate case. However, and I know that some people, regardless of their positions on Jenny Durkin, have a reason to dislike Jenny Durkin, the same way we might have different reasons to dislike Shama Sawant. This was the right decision. This was the right decision. There is total truth in the line that elections have consequences. All this was a reaction to things they just don't like coming from a politician they didn't vote for. And with respect, same thing with Shama Sawant. Now, I would like to see Shama Sawant recalled. I would. I think that she is toxic on this council. I think that she doesn't just merely disagree because she believes in the disagreement. I think she wants chaos. I don't think that of all the other ones on that council, who I vehemently disagree with. I don't think they go out of their way to create any kind of chaos. But I do with Shama Sawant because she is a socialist who understands the only way you're going to get rid of a capitalist system, which she, of course, is the opponent of, is to create chaos and take advantage of that. That's the only way that socialists and socialism can gain a foothold truly in this country, not just even in this city, is the chaos associated with it, with the movement. And I believe that she's more about that, and so I don't think she's good for the city. However, even though my heart tells me I want that to happen, that she gets recalled, same with Jenny Durkin, I think she has been an ineffective leader, it's a political question. It's a political question. It should inspire every single person who's out there, regardless, frankly, of whether or not you even live in the city of Seattle, to work that much harder when there's an election. A lot of people thought that this last Seattle City Council election was going to be different, that this time the silent majority would speak up and put in place people who are less fringe on some of the issues. Turns out that that was a failure, right? It turns out not enough people who were the quote-unquote silent majority did anything. Now, maybe it's because they weren't actually as inspired as we thought. Maybe they don't exist. Maybe they don't exist. Maybe the silent majority line is a bogus one, that it's not. It's actually the silent minority on these issues, that we just aren't on the same wavelength with the majority of Seattleites. And of course, because Seattle issues end up impacting this entire region, and not just Bellevue, not just like Burien or Edmond, like it has an impact on all of Western Washington just because of the size of the city and the impact that what happens in Seattle can be felt elsewhere. This should inspire you to work harder for whatever cause you hold, if it is the antithesis of the Durkin cause or the Sawant cause. Because these are political issues. And it's not even just the recall. You've got the Seattle Human Rights Commission coming out, and they're made up of appointees of either this mayor or previous mayor or the city council. They voted unanimously, 8-0, to send Jenny Durkin a letter asking her to resign immediately. Why? Again, politics. Liz Pichot is the co-chairperson of the Seattle Human Rights Commission, and she told Como News,
"We're asking for Mayor Durkin to willfully resign. We don't think that we can wait an extra year for the mayor to finish her term. We think that after what we saw this summer, especially with regard to police brutality and the fact that homelessness is getting worse, not better."
Okay, so kick her out of office when she runs for re-election. She's running for re-election. You have the opportunity to vote next year. Just don't support her. Go ahead, if you'd like, to recruit other folks to run against her, or one if you want to increase your chances of actually winning, who backs your politics. But this whole idea of, I'm calling for her to resign, so? You realize that's not a meaningful stunt, right? Watch, how about this? I'm calling on Liz Pichot to resign. Guess what happens? Literally nothing. She gets wind that I asked her to resign, says, okay, no, thank you. And then we move on. It is a needless stunt that doesn't actually create any kind of change, nor does it create any momentum when we're talking about politicians, unless they're engaged in some kind of serious scandal or potentially some illegal behavior. But simply, I don't like your politics. You should resign.
But then also not serious enough to enforce the moratorium, we feel is a clear case of a willful violation of her duty to protect Seattle citizens and their human rights.
Oh, their human rights to live rent-free, regardless of their circumstances. This is an idea that the mayor's office is not enforcing the moratorium on kicking people out who can't pay rent due to the coronavirus. But there's also a state moratorium, which supersedes the city moratorium. And again, every single bit of their complaints, all political.
We believe that a failure to act on the information that has been on her desk for her entire administration is a violation of her duty to address the problem.
Except it's not a violation of her duty. You see, it turns out she, as the mayor, gets to determine what she wants to tackle. And then you've got a council that provides some checks and balances, and they also get to decide what they're going to pursue. And if you don't like it, it's It's what we have elections for. Now, ironically, Shama Salwan is coming out and like, I'm on board, resign.
There was a demand for Durkan to resign or her failure to address the police violence.
There's also a demand for you to resign coming from people in and out of your district. Presumably, Shama Salwan does with the calls of resignation that Jenny Durkan does. Ignore them. Let's find out what else is in the big lead.
The big lead. Hey, how'd this get in here?
I like this story. What do you mean, how did this get in here? This is actually a good story. Petco has come out, and they're all like, we're going to stop selling electronic or electric shock collars for pets, or presumably adults. I'm not going to ask what you do with them. They're saying, we're not going to do it. In fact, they put out a statement on their website that said, today we stop the pain for Buddy because he barks at the doorbell. We stop the stress for Sadie because she jumps for joy all over the neighbors when they walk in the door. They don't tell you that Sadie also viciously bites them and something needs to be done. And we stop the fear that Cooper has because he prefers a good pair of sneakers over the chew toys on the market. You would shock the heck out of that dog if he ate your Nikes.
Yes, I would.
Instead, they're saying we want positive reinforcement, positive training, which I suppose is fine. I love this idea. I find it simply barbaric that we're putting shock collars that are remote controlled by people around.
Coming from someone who doesn't own a dog. And there's a lot more than just shock collars. There's like sound collars where it'll play a sound, like a high frequency, like kind of dog whistle.
That hurts it.
That it's telling it like, hey, let's cut that out. They're helpful. You've never owned a dog.
I have owned a dog.
When was the last time you owned a dog?
When I was younger and my family, we had dogs.
Okay. Would a shock collar have helped?
No. It would have been needlessly cruel. You don't feel bad about that?
It doesn't shock. You can
does
do it.
Does it hurt?
No.
It doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt. The electric shock does not hurt the dog, which, by the way, is part of a training program that is supposed to get the dog to change behavior. So you're arguing that it does not hurt the dog at all when you shock it so many times they stop the behavior.
It's
so
more
then
or less
you're
a reality
arguing
check.
That the dog's takeaway is, I'm going to eat more sneakers because I like being shocked.
No, it's not an enjoyable
you
feeling,
lunatic.
But it doesn't hurt.
Oh,
like,
shut up.
Bring in the shock collar. It'd be a great segment. I would do
actually,
it.
Actually, yeah, we can videotape that.
I would sacrifice myself to prove that point.
I'll put that on my Twitter feed, twitter.com/JasonRants. I'm Jason Rants filling in for Dory Monson.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
When we come back, we're going to dive into a decision by Yelp to go after so-called racist businesses. What could possibly go wrong? Actually, a lot could go wrong. We're going to get into that when we come back. I'm Jason Rants filling in for Dory Monson. Welcome back to the Dory Monson Show. I'm Jason Rants filling in for the day. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm normally on AM 770 KTTH doing afternoons, 3 to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. I really do appreciate you giving that show a shot if you like what you heard today. So the business Yelp, the app, the website Yelp, which is where you go if you want to read the reviews of restaurants from people who don't necessarily have, not necessarily just a sophisticated palate, but just taste in general. They just introduced a warning of a racist business as a way, I would argue, to remind younger people who are uber progressive that Yelp still exists. Because I don't know when the last time was that people even talked about Yelp. The whole idea was super popular and Yelp had a significant bit of attention for a while and it kind of just went away. And it's not due to the coronavirus, where people are looking up restaurants less. I think people are just smart enough to realize, you know, Ted and Polsbo might not be the person you go to for a recommendation on sushi.
I look at the star ratings occasionally because, like, they partnered with Google. If I, like, Google a restaurant, the Yelp star rating is right there. But I don't look at people's reviews.
Yeah.
I see, like, oh, somebody gave this 2.5. Cool.
Well, now they've got the racist business line, which, of course, is going to backfire. What do I hate the most?
Yourself.
Yes, but yes, okay. But what do I hate the most in relationship to these issues?
Virtue signaling.
I hate virtue signaling. That's what this is. This announcement that they made was a giant virtue signal. They came out strongly against racism. Thank you so much, Yelp. Up until this point, I always wondered where you stood. I always thought to myself, you know what? I wonder where they stand on racism. So thank you so much for coming out and telling me otherwise, that you're against it. Bravo, Yelp, bravo. And maybe I'm in the outlier class on this. I don't need a company to come out and tell me where they stand on any social issue. My assumption, always, across the board, they're going to be against evil things. I will always think that. I'm going to assume they're also against sexism. And probably against ageism. I'm just going to hold that opinion.
They haven't said it out loud, though, so can you be too sure?
Maybe they should send out another press release to tell us where they stand on all these things. I just assume that's where they stand. Now, in this case, the way that they're going to use the sort of the racist business warning is that they will put at the top of the Yelp page for the individual restaurant, wherever it is you're going, an alert that says business accused of racist behavior. They'll only do that where they say there's been, quote unquote, resounding evidence that a business owner or an employee had taken some kind of racist action. And that goes from like using racial slurs to symbols, racist symbols. The alert, they say, will always link to a news article that they call a credible media outlet. But as the New York Times pointed out, didn't really tell us which news organizations they consider to be, quote unquote, credible, or even how they define resounding evidence. Is one person on Twitter who makes a claim and then it gets picked up by King Five for a story and they didn't really come to a conclusion? Is that resounding evidence? Would they deem that from King Five a credible source, worthy of getting this kind of an alert? Because I can see how this can very easily be abused or even misconstrued. Let's say in the case where someone makes a claim of racism against a restaurant. They refuse to serve me because I'm Asian. And then you reach out to the business and the business is all like, you know what? Yeah, this employee did that. We fired them immediately. We are disgusted by this. I am absolutely appalled. My sincerest apologies to everybody. This employee does not stand for our values, which is why they don't stand in this business ever again. That's an individual who was accused of racism and them acknowledging that it happened. Does that get a warning? Should it get a warning? Seriously, should that get a warning? I would argue, of course, not. I think a reasonable person would say no. What if it's someone who is a waiter who's accused of racism, but it didn't happen, or there's no proof? And so the story comes up and says, this was the allegation. We haven't been able to find any proof, but the person who says they were a victim, it actually happened. When things aren't clear, would that follow the resounding evidence clause? Because I imagine that the person who's complaining would say, I'm the resounding evidence. And what about the cases where it's literally, it's just flatly wrong? Now, the current system is also a reason to believe that it might be abused. So there was an example that Christine Summers from AEI Institute, American Enterprise Institute, tweeted this out. It was actually really interesting. So Garden Walk is a restaurant based in California. And it got a 3-star review from someone who's supposedly an elite Yelp reviewer. This is the first 2 sentences from the review that gave it a 3-star instead of a 5-star. Okay, so first off, walked in, all white people seated inside. That's the first sign you know that this place is going to be iffy. Now, the restaurant reported it to Yelp, and they're saying, like, is this an appropriate reason to cut off some of our support? Because when this one person walked in, there were too many white people? That seems kind of bizarre. You know what Yelp did? Nothing. They left it up. They say it's not against their policy. Now, again, a reasonable person would look at that and say, well, that's suspect. You have, is this any kind of evidence to suggest that this is why a restaurant should not receive a five-star review? And I've got kind of an awkward question for Yelp, at least. Will Yelp get a racist review on Yelp? Because can I read you just the title of a Business Insider report from not even a full month ago? It was like a week and a half ago.
Yeah, please do.
At Yelp's Phoenix office, some insiders say a boys' club atmosphere fueled racism, sexism, and a hard partying culture on top of regular verbal abuse from customers. So would that qualify on Yelp to get one of these alerts? Kind of curious. Something tells me they're not going to add themselves to it. And I also have a question, if I might.
Please ask. Ask away.
Why do you have a restaurant on your service that is credibly accused of being a racist establishment? Why not just kick them off Yelp in its entirety? Because I believe Yelp can still get paid from these businesses, from advertising dollars and from elevating their results when people search for sushi or barbecue or whatever it is. Now, I suppose someone can come out and say, hey, the reason why we're going to do this is because it allows people to know not to go to this restaurant because they are credibly accused of racism. Here's the alternative to that argument. Racists will go on Yelp and look up what's the most racist barbecue joint in all of Washington. And then they'll say, that's my place.
Wouldn't you want all the racists, though, to stay away from, like, your type of spots? Like, I don't know.
I don't want them going anywhere.
I mean, I don't know. You can't stop them.
I'm telling you, this is another Jason Tells the Future. There's going to be a ton of problems with this once it's fully instituted. You're listening to The Dory Monson Show. I'm Jason Rantz. Earlier today, Nancy Pelosi wanted a commission to look at the 25th Amendment to go after future presidents, but definitely not Donald Trump. Right. The president's legal counsel, Jenna Ellis, is going to stop by in a moment with more. You're listening to Cairo Radio. Welcome back to the Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. I am Jason Rantz filling in. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi earlier today announced some legislation that would create a commission to allow Congress to get rid of a president using the 25th Amendment. It was a pretty blatantly and transparently political stunt, but maybe there's a little bit more to it. Joining me on the line is Jenna Ellis. She's a senior legal advisor to President Trump's reelection campaign, plus counsel for the president. Jenna, welcome back.
Thanks so much for having me. Always great to talk about craziness.
Yeah, so let's start with just the craziness of this idea, because obviously Nancy Pelosi is claiming that the president would be subject to the 25th Amendment due to incapacity because he had the coronavirus and now is better.
Yeah, well, as it relates to President Trump, the words that Speaker Pelosi had highlighted during her press conference were actually not the correct words that she should have highlighted, because mm-hmm. if you actually go to the text of the 25th Amendment in Section 4, it says whenever the vice president, whenever the vice president and a majority of either the principal officers of the executive departments or of such other body as Congress may by law provide, transmit their written declaration that the president's unable to discharge the powers, et cetera. So this basically means the vice president and either the cabinet or another body. So you can't act without the vice president mm-hmm. affirming his or her belief that the president is unable to discharge his duty. So as it relates to President Trump, there is no way that Vice President Pence is going to go along with Nancy's little
Correct.
Commission.
Yeah,
this is something where not highlight that at all in her press conference.
Well, and part of the reason why you have the vice president part in there is so that when you have a Congress that is controlled by one party, they can't use something like this to simply remove the president from another party. This is part of the checks and balances.
Exactly. It's the exact same rationale why the Senate has to convict when there is an impeachment from the House, just like what we learned earlier this year, because the Democrats hate Trump and they tried to manipulate the impeachment clause. They moved through with an impeachment, but the Senate then, by the two-thirds majority, said no. And so that's the check and balance there to make sure that there's not just one party that is in opposition, hates the president, and tries to use the Constitution out of context to oust him.
On top of that, of course, Nancy Pelosi claims that this has nothing to do with the president, even though yesterday, while talking about the president, she said, come back tomorrow as we talk about the 25th Amendment. She is saying that the timing has nothing to do with the election whatsoever, which is, of course, ludicrous on its face. She's doing this because she wants people to think that the president is not fit for office, while kind of sidestepping legitimate questions about the mental fitness of Joe Biden.
Right. And, you know, I think it's absolutely a political stunt that's totally transparent, especially when we're 3 weeks before the election. But it could be the one time that Nancy Pelosi was actually telling the truth, that this isn't about President Trump, because if the Harris-Biden administration actually wins, then Nancy's commission would try to bypass Biden's cabinet and install Kamala Harris. And she, of course, would be a willing and complicit vice president here. And so I think that Nancy is actually hedging her bets, because she could try to use this commission, again, against President Trump if he wins the election. But she definitely will try to use it in the context of a Biden-Harris administration, or as I like to call it, the Harris-Biden administration, because that's really what it is, and install Kamala Harris and use Biden's mental health status against him with her commission, regardless of who he installs as his cabinet members.
I'd be curious to see if any media member actually questions her on that particular issue, because she, Nancy Pelosi, is very clearly also trying to make this about Trump, because when she was asked this morning whether or not she believed that the president had met the threshold for the 25th Amendment to be invoked, she said that's not for us to decide, while creating legislation that would, in fact, make it for them to decide. If you're just joining us, by the way, we're talking with Jenna Ellis. She's senior legal advisor to the president's reelection campaign and also the counsel for the president. Regardless of the stunt aspect of this, it obviously, if she wanted this to actually pass, she would need to have Senate approval, and there's no way that's going to happen.
Right. No, I mean, and this would also be legislation that would have to be signed by the president,
yeah,
or have a veto override. So the practical reality is that it's not going to happen, because Congress would have to designate this commission as one of the 25th Amendment bodies pursuant to creating that by law. So it has to go through the legislative process. But this is just her putting this back in the news cycle and trying to make the 25th Amendment the prevalent question going into the election. Of course, it's a stunt, and Nancy Pelosi has never actually used the Constitution for its original intent and purpose, which is to preserve and protect the rights of every American. She's using it for her own corrupt, power-grabbing purposes. And so this is yet another reason why Democrats should not ever be in power, because they don't use it with the right intentions. They always look to manipulate the Constitution and circumvent the system.
So we're going into a weekend where the president's doctor has indicated that he's going to be cleared to return to his regular activities. Presumably, it's not just because he's feeling better, but because he's got negative tests for long enough to suggest that he's no longer contagious. This happens just a few days before what was supposed to be the second presidential debate, but was canceled after they wanted to just do it virtually. As of this moment, it seems to be that both sides have agreed just to postpone it so that they can have in-person debates, correct?
That's what it seems like. And, you know, it was really telling that the Commission on Presidential Debates didn't consult with either campaign and simply unilaterally decided to hold this as a virtual event. Neither side had agreed to that. No one even talked about it. So I think that that's the bigger story, that clearly mission shouldn't be doing that. But yeah, as of now, it looks like for the 15th, both candidates, you know, both the president and Joe Biden are going to just be doing their own events. But hopefully we will still have two more debates. The Biden camp was trying to say, oh, let's just push off the town hall to October 22nd. That was the original date of the third debate. So we still need to have two more debates. And if Joe Biden doesn't agree to that, then there's definitely a problem there in terms of what he promised to the American people. But going back to what you just said, Jason, I mean, this is a candidate as well as his vice presidential candidate in Kamala Harris that aren't willing to answer these questions. They aren't willing. You know, they're not going to respond to the 25th Amendment question and Nancy Pelosi. They haven't been willing to respond to basic questions like, are you going to pack the U.S. Supreme Court and make the judicial branch into an activist body? I mean, this is something where at every turn in the road, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are trying to not answer the questions of the American people, not be transparent, not show up for debate.
Jenna Ellis, constitutional law attorney, senior legal advisor to the president's reelection campaign. Thank you so much for stopping by. As always, really appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. I'm Jason Rance filling in. Thank you so much for tuning in. Really do appreciate it. Coming up next, Tom and Curly. Or, of course, The Jason Rance Show on KTTH AM 770, which also starts in just about 6 minutes.
Wait a minute. I'm not finished. I'm not finished, fake news.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.